Thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, where we discuss the latest news, rumors, and games of the NFL and college football. As always, I'm Jeremiah.
And I'm Anthony.
And we're back again. And we have, we actually kind of have somewhat a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about Darrelle Revis. There's a lot that's happened with Darrelle Revis from the past 24 hours. We're going to talk about the Dolphins and some roster moves that they made. And we're going to talk about the team that has the easiest strength of schedule. So, let's start with Darrelle Revis, Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
So, it looks like the cornerback, he's charged with four felonies and a misdemeanor by Pittsburgh police Thursday night from his alleged involvement in a street altercation over the weekend that... witnesses say that left two men unconscious. So, police in Pittsburgh charged Revis with two felony counts of aggravated assault, one felony count each of robbery and conspiracy, and a misdemeanor count of terrorist threats. Revis' attorney, Blaine Jones, said, you know, he actually has a case against this. You know, if you just know the whole entire thing, how this came about. Revis was in Pittsburgh, and you know, he played, you know, at the University of Pittsburgh and all that. So there was two men involved in this, right? All right, 21, 22-year-old. And according to police, a 22-year-old man was walking on the street when he spotted someone who resembled Revis, which it was.
Sure.
And the man confronted him, who acknowledge who he was. He knows, hey, you know, that's Darrelle Revis. So at some point, you know, the man began recording video of Darrelle Revis on his cell phone and continued to follow him. So the police, and statement by the police, they said at some point Revis snatched his cell phone away and attempted to delete the video. And also on the statement by the police, Revis tossed the cell phone on the street. And then there comes the 21-year-old man that came to help to retrieve it. So an argument ensued between all of them. So an identified man came to help Revis. The other man told police they were punched. They remember waking up to talk to the police. So allegedly, Revis pretty much knocked these guys out, allegedly. So officers viewed the cell phone video at the scene and confirmed the person in the actual video was Revis. And the men were later taken to the hospital. But Jones said, you know, his agent, or should I say his attorney, returned home to Pittsburgh to visit family, friends, stopped by a location at the south side of the city that he is actually in the process of developing. Reporters asked why he was there such a late hour. Jones said he didn't want to be around a lot of people, which is kind of understandable when you're kind of a public figure like Darrelle Revis. And, you know, he kind of wanted to do it on his own terms. So he was out there doing it alone at a late hour, pretty much being by himself. So Revis was physically, Jones said that Revis was physically assaulted while at the location by a group of at least five people. So the attorney said Revis was shoved by one of the men, attempted to walk away. The man pushed Revis, said he yelled at him, and then, you know, Revis knocked the cell phone out of the man's hand, the one that was recording. And Jones said, quote, "It's my understanding that when Darrelle turned around, he wasn't sure whether it was a weapon or a phone. He didn't know. He just knows he's left. These guys were saying his name. He turns around and sees an object, and he wasn't sure whether he was going to get robbed or assaulted or what. He feared for his safety," end quote. So when you're by yourself in the kind of like in a unattended area at night at such a late hour and people approach you, you're kind of going to get scared a little bit. But then again, do you think Darrelle Revis has a case again, for him, Anthony? And honestly, though, I was gonna say, why was he out late at such a late hour? You know what I'm saying?
That's whatever. Like, don't. Yeah. I mean, he's out. That's fine. Like, yeah. You know, I'm not gonna yell at somebody for doing that. But this whole situation, you know, it's still murky because basically he said kind of thing. We're not 100% sure of what happened, and it's hard. Like, you know, if he gets convicted, then he could possibly serve jail time, which honestly doesn't generally happen. Like, football wise or even sports wise, really, there's only a handful of times where people actually go to jail, and that's what, like, Michael Vick, Aaron Hernandez, and Plaxico Burress, and all three of those cases are very different, you know, circumstances. But, you know, as far as like a football aspect with this whole thing, like, his cap hit is $6 million, right? His cap hit is 15, but if they cut him, they, you know, the dead money is $6 million off his contract, because he signed a giant, like, $72 million contract few years back when he came back to New York, played 2 years and wasn't really good last year, and there was questions whether he would even be back on the team this year, but because the whole thing happened while he was playing, you could kind of see him all of a sudden basically not be the guy anymore, not be someone who was what we thought of Dale Revis back when he was with the Jets early on and was with the Patriots. So, like, he wasn't that guy anymore. So, you know, we thought he'd probably be cut to begin with, and this whole thing happens, and now it's looking like a certainty that he gets cut. He'll probably land with another team, but with this whole, you know, these allegations that have come about, I don't know what'll happen. Like, you kind of got to let the process play out a little bit and kind of go from there, because you don't want to necessarily, like, say, like, oh, I think he's innocent, because I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows what happened. He could have been a totally terrible person, or he could be totally set up. I have no idea which one it is. You know, right now it's just, you know, allegations that are being thrown out there, and we're going to figure it out probably the next few months what, you know, probably happened. I can't say what actually happened, but what might have happened. So, you know, we'll kind of go from there with it. But this whole thing with Revis, it's not helping his scenarios from a football standpoint, but at the same time, assuming he doesn't actually serve jail time, this doesn't help his cause with the Jets and probably makes him now go somewhere else, because you also have the scenario where he's owed all this money, and, you know, Ben was talking about, like, oh, you know, do you think he would give the money back, or, you know, kind of restructure his contract, right? Like, kind of do the thing where he can stay longer. And no, I mean, when has Revis ever done that? Revis has been kind of cold-blooded assassin the whole time. When he's with the Jets the first time, he's like, I want more money. No, cool, I'm going to go to Tampa Bay. Then he went to New England, got a lot of money, was there for a year, and then he said, I still want money. And Belichick's like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that anymore. And he's like, okay, went back to the Jets. Like, he's all about getting his money. And cool, awesome, great, good for you. You only have so long that you could actually be at the top end of your sport. And he's, like, what, 31 years old now, so he doesn't have that much longer to do this. So I'm totally, you know, good with him basically trying to get as much as he can while he's here. But I don't think he'd give his money back. Do you think he'd give his money back?
No. Why would he?
No, I don't think he'd give his... Right. I don't think he would try and, like, help out the team. So they'll probably cut him, and then he'll go to, I mean, I don't know, the Dolphins, the Broncos, the Chiefs, you know, some team or whatever that's a decent enough defense that he think he can help. But, you know, this situation, from a legal perspective, we'll see how it plays out over the next few months and see if he actually has to serve any kind of, like, actual time, or if it's just a plea bargain, or if it's just something that gets kind of resolved and all of a sudden in a few months we're like, oh, yeah, Revis. Oh, he's not charged? Oh, okay, cool. He just signed with the team.
Yeah, from a legal standpoint, I think it's something to kind of wait and see what all the legal process works, because that's pretty much all we know now. He is charged with these felonies and a misdemeanor. But from a football standpoint, Anthony, Revis had his worst year of his career.
Oh, yeah, by far.
He had his worst year of his career ever, you know, after being, like, one of the top cornerbacks for early part of his career with the Jets. I think, honestly, right now, I think this no doubt kind of changes. I think at this point, this story right here, I think it gives the Jets a reason to cut him. Because why wouldn't you at this point, especially with this? And I do think once the legal process is all played out, I think that's when a team will, you know, happen to talk to Revis. I kind of think if a team does, let's just say Revis does happen to serve jail time, I don't think a team is going to want to talk to him until after he is done. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, like they're going to want all this stuff to be ironed out. You know, everything to be like, oh, okay, cool. There's nothing going to happen. You're not charged. Everything's good. Okay, cool. Now I'll bring you in. because there's going to be some coordinator, right? There's going to be some Wade Phillips over in L.A. just basically saying, like, oh, I think I can make him better, right? I've seen what Revis is. I think I can get him close to that, even if it's not a cornerback, because we saw what we saw. Charles Woodson basically later on in his life basically become a good safety after being a cornerback for a while. Like, you can transition into these things. He may not be what Darrell Revis was in 2000, call it like 8 or 9 or something like that, but he can still be somebody that's like ultra reliable to a team and someone that you can build towards to get a Super Bowl, even if it's a safety or even nickelback. Like, he can still be an effective player. It's just maybe not at the level it was before. And some team, you know, because you saw with other things like what Dwight Freeney. Right, Dwight Freeney was a guy that was like a super stud defensive end, getting all these sacks all the time. But then later in life, he's like, well, okay, I can't do that anymore. And they're like, hey, that's fine. We're just going to basically make you a defensive end in obvious passing plays. So that way, we're just going to let you just go, you know, balls out basically, you know, for a handful of plays a game. So that way, we don't get you tired. And he was still effective in that aspect. And Revis, okay, cool, you're not the same guy, but we're going to put you in spots that basically are advantageous for you.
Yeah, and Darrell Revis actually saying he's willing to switch to safety as well. He was planning to have a rebound 2017.
Mm-hmm.
And Revis actually showed up to camp last season out of shape.
Right.
So that was – that contributed to a slow start. And the Jets have – they haven't really said anything on Revis's status even before this incident that happened. But – if he does, if the Jets do cut him, which I do think it's going to happen at this point, I do think a team will take a will talk to him and at least try to get a maybe at least a 1-year deal, because I think the value of Revis is kind of lower now. He mm-hmm. had his worst year of his career, and I do think he should switch to safety. He's still young enough to have a good career at safety to win his. You know, to end his NFL playing days. So he's 31 years old, still has time to make the transition and be really effective. I think the thing with Charles Woodson, he kind of did it, I think, when he was like 35, 34, something like that, when he was with the Packers. He did it a little bit later in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Charles Woodson actually went back to the Raiders as well, he played safety like he did with the Packers. So. Mm-hmm. I do think Revis, I think if he makes the transition to safety this year, I think it could bode well for him. I think he can have a really good, effective 3 to 4 years left in him.
Oh, yeah. No, if he transitions in the right way, because he's 31 years old. He's not like he's 35. He's 31. He still has a handful of years in him to be a good player. Just he's not Revis Island anymore. That part's just gone.
No. Revis Island, it came and went.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to take our first break here, and we're actually going to talk about the Miami Dolphins. They made some roster moves yesterday, and we're going to let you know what those roster moves are when we get back to the Guns to Me Concepts football podcast.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the Goes to Me Concepts Football Podcast. And before the break, we're talking about the Red Revis and how his pretty much his legal situation right now could hurt his chances of staying with the Jets or the Jets cutting him. But from a football standpoint, we did talk about how he had his worst year of his career, and that can also play – that probably be the major part of him being cut. Well, Anthony, you could pretty much say that Mario Williams practically had his worst season ever in his career.
Yeah, no, he was bad.
I don't think it's arguable at all, you being a Dolphins fan.
Right.
All.
No, we saw it firsthand. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, at one time, Mario Williams was one of the best players in the NFL. You know, number one overall pick, getting all these sacks, going from, Houston to Buffalo being successful in both places. But we saw last year that he kind of had a riff with Rex Ryan, right? It was one of those things where they didn't like each other or they didn't get along, and one guy said, oh, he didn't practice hard, and the other one said, like, oh, well, no, it was a scheme. They didn't put me in the right positions. Kind of going back and forth the whole time. It was like, okay, fine, but now you're going to put you on Miami because Miami has people like Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake. They have people that actually can help out, and, you know, have those guys have to be double-teamed, right? So at the same time, if they have to be double-teamed, that leaves space for you because I can't double team three people. Like, there's only so many people you can put on a football field.
There's only like five offensive linemen.
Yeah, so yeah. You can, you know, maybe if you want to put a tight end to block also, like, there can only be so many things you do. And it's like, okay, cool. So if you can have a good season, then we'll take your side. But I mean, he had a 1.5 sack season, and now all of a sudden you look at him, it's like, oh, okay, cool. So Rex Ryan was right. You aren't exactly the same team anymore. Like, you're not the same team, same player anymore. And now he got cut. And we're talking about Revis in the whole sense of like, oh, someone will sign him because, you know, while he had a bad year, he's still Darrell Revis. Maybe the same kind of thing with Mario Williams too, right? In the situation where he's, you know, a number one overall pick, right? He was at one time maybe not the best defensive end on the planet, but like still top two, top three, right? Still a really, really good player in the league. Now he is an aging player who had a bad year, who's coming off of basically disputes with two separate organizations. You have the situation where you don't know necessarily if this is just like a, you know, thing where it's effort or it's talent, because that's the worst thing. If it's effort, then that's, you know, something where you can't really get back as much. Because if it's talent, it's like, okay, well, talent, he's not as good anymore, but he's still got like 70% of his talent, right? It's like, okay, we can work around that, like we talked about Darrell Revis and also like someone like a Dwight Freeney. But if it's effort, that you have no idea how to prepare for that, right? Because if it's effort, that could just be him just being like, I don't want to play. Like, I don't want to do this right now. And now that hurts your team, right? If, at least if you're trying but you can't do it anymore, you can work around that. It's hard to work around someone who doesn't try. And for Mario Williams, this is two straight years where either he's not good anymore or he's not trying. You can only get so many chances before the NFL as a whole basically says, like, yeah, never mind, we're not going to use this anymore. You guys, you know, you can go home. Like, we're not going to keep signing you if you're going to keep doing this to us.
Yeah, and, you know, the Dolphins did cut Mario Williams, like you said, Anthony. Right. That wasn't the only roster move that they made.
Nope.
They did cut Earl Mitchell as well, the defensive tackle, who might generate some interest. Probably will. They were expected to cut Brandon Elbert, the starting left tackle, but he's expected to be traded now. But getting back to Mario Williams here, Mario Williams and Earl Mitchell, they're both of them being cut is going to free up $12.5 million of their salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to Mario Williams here, okay, he 2014, mm-hmm. 2014 had a career high 14.5 sacks. Looks like he was still one of the most dominant pass rushers in the game. And that was when he was with the Buffalo Bills.
Right.
Then had 5 sacks. And, you know, kind of big drop-off in production. Then goes over to Miami. And only produces 1.5 sacks. And you got to think about, he had Ndamukong Suh. He had Cameron Wake. He still can only produce 1.5 sacks.
Yeah, that's
like,
yeah, you have all, like I said, the people around you where it's something. You know, if you ever had any option or any chance of doing well, you have these two guys around you. Cameron Wake was still doing his thing after a torn Achilles. Like, do you understand how hard it is to come back from a torn Achilles? Like, especially when your job is basically to be stronger than the other guy, trying to make sure you don't get to the quarterback. And he's also 35 years old, Cameron Wake, but he looks like a freak of nature. You're still coming back getting 11.5 sacks, you know, going all out. And then you got Mario Williams, seemingly healthy, 1.5 sacks. Like, that's probably the biggest indictment.
Yeah. And, you know, Mario Williams was one of the top. Well, he was the first.
Yeah, number one
pick.
Yeah.
But what a disappointment he was for Miami. He signed a 2-year $70 million deal. He suffered. He actually had trouble staying on the field as well. He had multiple injuries.
Sure.
Concussions, ankle injuries. So that made it play a part in his production.
Right.
But he lost his starting job in October. And he didn't appear a lot.
he had 13 games that he played in. He started, but even then, like, even if you only play, you start in five games, it's still...
He lost his starting job.
Yeah, and you lost your starting job. You had 1.5 sacks. It's really bad, right? You know, Earl Mitchell, fine. Like, you know, he was never, like, the greatest guy from Miami, but he was a pretty good player. He just kind of slowly got worse and worse, and you cut him. Fine. Totally get that part. Stuff happens. Mario Williams, the weird thing with Dolphins is you had two, and I know this because watching the team and following the team, like, I kind of watch as closer than I would, say, like, the Chiefs or the Broncos or something like that. The Dolphins, you had two guys that came in that were supposed to be the people that you looked for having big seasons, right? Because you brought in Arian Foster. He was supposed to be the running back that kind of, like, actually stabilized the, you know, running game and made stuff better for Ryan Tannehill. And then you had Mario Williams to come in to basically help on the defensive end because Cameron Wake you thought would be bad because, again, torn Achilles. After a couple of games, Arian Foster, never mind, you go retire, you can go away now. Jay Ajayi, all these games are 200 yards. Now, all of a sudden, he's the number one running back by a mile. And cool, now that's all set up, but that came out of nowhere. You had someone like Kiko Alonso who came out of the blue for the Dolphins and played really well for them on the trade that you didn't really expect him to be the number one guy coming out of. You had Mario Williams, all this expectation, he stunk. Cameron Wake came back, still was a beast, made a Pro Bowl, everything else like that. This whole team kind of got production in weird, random forms. And now there's even the thing now they're talking about, you know, trying to trade Brandon Albert. But it was a weird thing because having that be my team, I get updates from Bleacher Report on my phone, right? And they had the situation where they first said they cut Brandon Albert. The first report, you know, that I got on my phone was saying that they cut him, and it was like, oh, okay, cool, they cut him. But then it was like, oh, no, we're trying to trade him, which, okay, now that's not going to work. Because if you already said you're going to cut him, now the team's going to be like, okay, I'll give you a seventh-round pick. Like, they're going to try to lowball the heck out of him to try and make it really hard for them to do anything. Now, best they're going to get is, like, some really terrible player and a seventh-round pick. So they're probably just going to have to cut him anyways, you know, because that's what got out first, and that was via NFL Network. That wasn't from some random person. That was a legit source that was saying he was cut. Now they're just trying to kind of scrape that together, so they're probably going to end up cutting Brandon Albert as well, and he'll probably go to, you know, some pretty good team as well, because that was actually a pretty decent strength for the Dolphins, at least on one end of their offensive line, because you had him and Laremy Tunsil and Mike Pouncey basically solidifying three of the five lineman spots. Now you're going to have probably Tunsil go to left tackle, which all this is really boring. You don't care because it's lineman talk, not you. I'm just talking about the people listening. It's lineman talk. No one cares about offensive linemen. But the point is, now you have a situation where you had three guys who had legitimate promise going into this year, all of which have gotten cut.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, Brandon Albert actually has 2 years left on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
None of it's guaranteed, so it wouldn't matter if they cut him anyway. And they are probably going to move Laremy Tunsil to left tackle, who played guard this year.
Gas mask. Mario
Williams, I can see him getting interest from another team, but I feel like he's going to – I feel like a lot of teams are going to try to get him a lot cheaper now.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think they could because, come on, like, you haven't produced and you haven't – your production has fallen off in the last 2 years. Mitchell, I do think he can be a starter for a pretty good contender. Mm-hmm. There's some Broncos have generated some interest there. But overall, you know, the Dolphins still made the playoffs. I do think that maybe these moves can potentially get them a little bit better, maybe get them a little bit younger because, you know, they do have – they look like they got some good pieces now. They look like Ryan Tannehill has really improved. Maybe if he stayed healthy, maybe the playoff run would have been a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows? They got some really talented receivers there. I loved watching Jarvis Landry. I love watching Devontae Parker.
Yeah.
I forgot his name for a minute.
They have at least some talent on the roster. It's not necessarily the best receiving core, but at least it's something that you can work with.
It's definitely pretty solid pieces to work with. You know, they got Jay Ajayi. It looks like he's about to be the running back for the Dolphins for the next maybe 4 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So they do got some pieces around them. I just think, you know, they need to, you know, they just weren't worth the money.
And right.
May possibly so.
Yeah, and that happens, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, we're going to take our last break here, and we're going to – discussed the team with the easiest schedule next year and what it does for their head coach. And we're actually going to get some a little bit of college football talk, Anthony, a little bit. We got a team moving from the FCS to the FBS, and it's not really a team that you expect it to be. We're going to tell you why when we get back to the Guns to Meet Concepts football podcast.
Are you looking for help for your fantasy football team? Check out the GSMC Fantasy Football Podcast. Get today's best advice on who to start, who to sit, even who you should draft. From sleeper picks to red-hot lineups, they got it all covered for you. That's gsmcpodcast.com/fantasy-football-podcast. We'll cover traditional leagues, dynasty, PPR, even IDP leagues. When you need fantasy help, there's just one show to hit up. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
Well, yesterday, there was an FCS program that announced that they were going to move to the FBS. And sure, you know, when you think of the FCS, you think of teams like North Dakota State, you know, Eastern Washington.
Appalachian. Oh, no, Appalachian went back to.
They're not. No,
yeah, they went back up, yeah.
They're in the Sun Belt Conference. So when you think of the FCS, you think of, you know, the successful programs like North Dakota State, Eastern Washington, the Montana State.
Right.
None of those teams are moving to the FBS. You know, the team, and I was surprised by this, the team that's going to make the move to the FBS is Liberty. Liberty tried to gain membership to the Sun Belt Conference, and that should have told them, maybe we should stay in the FCS. Nope, they're going to go to the FBS as an independent. So they're going to join Notre Dame. They're going to join the Army there. Not the Army. I think it's the Navy. No, not the Navy. I think it is the Army. I don't know why.
I think Army is, yeah.
Yeah, Army. Massachusetts. Who else is an independent in the FBS? I can't think of one on top of my head right
Notre
now.
Notre Dame's the only one that's like notable, still not in a conference, at least in football.
BYU.
BYU is, yeah.
Also independent. So they're going to join those programs as an independent. So the reclassification process will begin, and there'll be a full FBS program starting 2019. So with 2018 season, they're going to have three FBS games, and then in 2019, they're going to have at least five home FBS opponents. So you're going to like this, Anthony, because I know you like chaos. So the athletic director at Liberty, do you know who it is?
Who is that?
It is Ian McCall. You know where he's from?
Where is that?
He's from Baylor.
See,
He got hired by Liberty last year, and he was, let's just say, he was part of probably the most scandalous, probably the biggest scandal in college football in quite some time. So he is the athletic director there, who he resigned, honestly, at Baylor because of his involvement in the scandal there. I don't want to get into that Baylor scandal, like, way too deep into it, but he's back in the FBS. He's back there.
Okay, one thing, really quick. Okay, you say I like chaos. Okay, do not rub me in with the whole thing with Baylor saying I like that whole situation. That's not how that goes. Now, you know, I like chaos when it comes to someone that's kind of funny and certain things that are happening like that, like Russell Westbrook trying to play in the All-Star game with Kevin Durant, or people like Deion Sanders, who is kind of a madman, but I like watching them. Baylor situation, totally different, totally terrible.
My bad. That was a poor choice of words.
Point is, you have this thing with Ian McCall now, who, you know, he's currently the athletic director, like I said, for Liberty. He was at Baylor, and you look at the thing, it's kind of weird because Turner Gill's also the head coach there. The guy used to be at Buffalo and was doing pretty well, but he's, like, this whole situation with Liberty. Liberty's never been that good of a program, right? It's not like they have some history. It's not like it's SMU who had a good run back in the 80s or something like that and they've fallen on hard times ever since. Now you get the situation where, I mean, it's just like, honestly, this whole thing is basically college football, right? Because college football is one of those things that, look, we all want to say like, oh, it's college football and you're doing it for your team and you're doing it for the love of the game. No, like, it's basically a business, right? And McCall, when he was in Baylor, up until everything went south, he was doing a good job at least keeping the football program upright and everything looked like it was going smoothly. Then the bottom fell out and we saw how basically much of a terrible person slash program Baylor was. And Liberty doesn't care about that. Liberty just wants to be good. They will sell their soul to be good. And now you have the situation where you basically want to be better. So we're going to take the people that made it better, even if the way they made it better was basically being terrible human beings. So Liberty might be good, honestly, in 3 or 4 years. But also, like, I don't understand how you go about doing this. Like, I don't know if Ian McCall is just, like, a great, great salesman and just can basically convince everybody in the room, like, oh, no, it's fine. This wasn't exactly what it was looking like. It's everything's fine. Don't worry about it. We're going to move on. This is going to be fine. Like, I don't know what you say in that meeting, but, I mean, forget about the fact that, you know, what they were accused of was terrible. It just happened, man. This isn't like it's 10 years later and you got some time to pass and say, like, I've learned from my mistakes. Like, this is super recently, and now you're going to hire him back this quick to a pretty prominent job, basically the same thing he had before. Yeah, it's a smaller school or whatever, but he's still got his job, and they have all these hopes and beliefs in him, and it's something that I understand it because business is business, and, you know, as much as you want to make things ethical and great and everything, you know, everyone's a good person. No, they're not. Some people are just terrible human beings. And business is dirty and greasy and terrible sometimes, and this kind of follows that path.
Do you know who their first opponent that they're going to open this season with?
Liberty?
Yeah.
Who?
Baylor. I'm not joking.
Are you no.
It's Baylor. Yeah, Liberty
no.
will... Yes. Yes.
This just makes me feel dirty,
serious.
Man.
They're going to open it at Baylor.
Like, this just makes me feel dirty. Like, it's just one of those things where it's just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what, like, I honestly don't know what to say about it, man.
There's really not a lot to say. I was shocked by the move because Liberty, okay, first of all, as a football program, Liberty hasn't had a whole lot of success. They only have 4 wins all time against FBS school. Do you know what the record is? 4-21.
That's
those
not good.
Those four wins weren't exactly big, prominent programs. Okay, Liberty's first FBS victory was...
By the way, you said you know what their record was, and then within like 0.1 seconds, you said 4-21. You didn't give me any chance to like figure out what the other one was. It's fine.
My bad.
It's fine, but go.
Way to ruin the flow. I'm kidding. No, but they're 4-21. The first victory in the FBS for Liberty was against Eastern Michigan in 1989. That was
sure.
A 25-24 win.
Mm-hmm.
Then they got a 27-23 win over Ball State in 2010. A 55-48 win over Appalachian State in 2014. And a 41-33 win over Georgia State in 2015. So it's funny that, you know, it's Eastern Michigan, Appalachian State, and Georgia State because each of those programs were at its third season of the FBS at that time. So, you know, I don't know if they're going to – I don't think they're going to be successful right again because we see the thing with UMass. They've been having trouble winning games at the FBS level after being an FCS competitor for a while. So they're not going to have a lot of success out of the gate. But, you know, when you look after history in the FCS, you know, the Flames, which is their mascot, by the way, Anthony and Liberty
mm-hmm. –
they have won a share of the Big South Conference in 8 of the last 10 years, but only just one 10-win season in program history, which was a 10-2 record in 2008. So Liberty played 2 FBS schools last season, Anthony. That was SMU and Virginia Tech, and they lost those 2 games by a combined 38 points. So I think that it's going to be a long time for them to have a winning season, but from football standpoint, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense, but as a kind of like a business standpoint, it kind of does in a way if you think about the guy that's actually running the athletic program.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of a subplot that's kind of gone a little under the radar, so to speak. I feel like no one has really talked about McCall being in the FBS again.
Right.
But it is something to think about, you know. We've seen the scandal that Baylor was been in, and, you know, there's still some talk of maybe Baylor should get the death penalty or not because it was such a – probably the most scandalous thing that ever happened in college football in a long time, ever since, you know, SMU's academic scandal in the 80s when they made him get the death penalty there.
Well, yeah, they were basically taking cash payments for everything, and they decided to do a death penalty for them. But, yeah.
This is a lot worse than that.
Well, yeah, this is a lot worse. So is Penn State, but I don't know how you basically classify something as basically saying, like, because these people were awful human beings, now we're going to take away sports for, you know, football, I should say, for everybody. Like, I don't know how to necessarily, like, quantify those things.
There's a whole lot to go into that, but and it's going to be talked about for the next, like, few years about Baylor. But, yeah, you know, Ian McCall, the former Baylor athletic director, is now back in the FBS as, you know, running the athletic program Liberty. And he just got hired last year, too, after pretty much resigning
from
Baylor. So it literally just happened. That I think the Baylor scandal is not going to go away anytime soon because it's really complex, but it's also lots of things that went on and a lot of sensitive issues went on as well. But yeah, Anthony, from football standpoint, I don't see Liberty competing very soon. I just think it was kind of odd to move up. I don't really get it from a football standpoint. But they do got 2 years before they fully move to the FBS. Maybe it can help with the recruits. With them being independent, maybe it would help them kind of set their own schedule. So they got that going for them. But overall, I don't know if they'll have like a winning season or at least making to be a bowl eligible team by the first full year. Well, okay, moving on to the NFL. We're gonna start talking about the schedule, Anthony. And I know it's a little early. It's like late middle of February. I don't think it's ever too late to talk about the schedule. Do you?
No, I like it. Let's go.
Okay, so it looks like the Colts have the easiest schedule. It looks like the Colts. This is who they play. Their home opponents are the Broncos, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Jaguars, the Titans, the 49ers, pretty much the one team that I just said was the Titans. Actually, no, the Cardinals are pretty tough too, and the Broncos. But they're playing the Browns, they're playing the 49ers, playing the Jaguars at home. Then when you go to their away opponents, they're playing the Rams, they're playing the Jaguars again because, you know, they're in the division. And they're playing the Bengals, who win 6-9-1. So it looks like that, you know, they have a pretty easy schedule.
Well, they're playing the AFC North and they're playing the NFC West. Like, they're playing the two conferences like that. So the NFC West stinks, right, because you basically have the Seahawks, the only team last year that was good. So that part's nice. And then in the AFC North, you have the Browns, which is always just like, hey, we get the Browns. Awesome, cool, let's do this kind of thing. And then also you get the random other teams, also obviously the team in your division. But yeah, with this, it kind of gives Pagano this last kind of just like, okay, we fired the GM because you two hated each other. We tried to do counseling, literally, for you guys. That didn't work out. Now we're going to basically give you one more shot. You had a really easy schedule. You have Andrew Luck. You know, you have T.Y. Hilton. You have some decent players on the team. You get one more year. Let's see how you do with basically the easiest schedule in the NFL. It just now depends when you play each other, you know, if you play the Browns in the first week of the season or whatever, however that's going to work, you know, but we give you an easy schedule and we'll see how you do from here.
Well, you know, the Colts only play two opponents. They only play two opponents with at least like 10 wins.
Right.
Only two opponents with 10 wins. And that, I think this is a make or break year for Chuck Pagano here.
Yeah.
And if this team cannot make the playoffs with this easy of a schedule, that he's definitely going to be fired. I think this is...
Well, that's been this...
I kind of think Chuck Pagano should have been fired. I thought he was going to be fired this year, but it looks like they wanted to keep him instead of let go of Ryan Rickson, who has actually done a terrible job of drafting since his first draft. But they only have two opponents with 10 wins or more. That's the Steelers, who won the AFC North, and that is the Seahawks, who won the NFC West. The other teams with winning records are all 9-7. You know, they play the Texans twice. They play the Titans twice. They play the Denver Broncos.
Which is going to be a really hard game because it's the Broncos, and they probably have a better grasp of quarterback by that time.
And then they played the Ravens, who were 8-8, and you know they played the Bengals, who are 6-9-1, and the Cardinals, who are 7-8-1. So,
but see, the thing with this team has always been, it's not necessarily, it doesn't matter necessarily who they play out of the division, because they'll play the people in the division, and in the division, they've always been kind of bad, right? The Jaguars have been bad for a decade now, and the Titans are finally looking good with Marcus Mariota, but he also got injured at the end of the year. And then you get something like the Texans, who have a great defense, but the quarterback was bad. So it comes down to basically, you know, are they going to be the best in the division? That's a bad division. You know, Andrew Luck was hurt a decent amount last year. He was kind of not the guy that you would hope he would be. The offensive line was bad. The defense wasn't that good. So if they can get these things squared up, and all they have to be isn't necessarily a 12-14, they just have to be the best in the bad division.
Yeah, and I think they could do it. Yeah. I think they can do it. You know,
they came close this year.
As of now, Houston still doesn't have a quarterback.
Sure.
That can change. You know, the Titans, they look like they got a lot better. That's probably the most improved team. I think Titans are a legit wild card contender heading to 2017. The Jaguars, I think they have good pieces on defense, but man, they need to fix that offense. They need to fix that offense so bad. Like, oh man, it was disgusting to watch last year. But you know, the Colts, I do think with them being in probably the most easiest division with the most easiest schedule,
right?
This is the year they have to make the It makes it
like the easiest it can possibly be for them, because you got the best quarterback in the division, which actually has, you know, a decent other quarterback, like I said, Mariota. But you have the best quarterback in the division. You have an easy division. You're playing another bad division in the NFC West. You're playing another terrible team in the Browns. There's a lot set up for Pagano to finally make it to the playoffs and maybe make it back to, say, the AFC Championship game. Because if he does that, then he's staying, period. End of story. Like, if you make it to the playoffs and win a game or two, you're coming back. Even if the GM that they hired doesn't necessarily like you, if you win enough, they're going to basically have to bring you back. And this at least sets it up well for them to win the division, get a top four seed, and then kind of go from there and see what happens.
Okay, I want to bring something up before we go. Okay, The Colts will not be playing the Patriots because, you know, the Colts won the AFC East when they did win the Super Bowl, and the Colts finished third. So this is the third time since 2003 that the two teams won't play. Maybe that's because it was Peyton Manning and Tom Brady.
Yes, but that was always, they were going to put that game on the schedule, period, because basically the way the NFL schedule works is you play your division six times, right? You play the other three teams twice. You play two other divisions, which ends up being eight games, so that becomes 14 games. And then there's just two other games that are just like randomly either...
They go by placing.
But I mean, like, it's just... But it's not necessarily a thing of just like, you know, oh, this year we're going to play the Colts and the next... Or the Colts. Next, play the Dolphins. The next year we're going to play, you know, the Cowboys. Like, they have this structure to it, but the other two games aren't as structured as, you know, you're going to play this division and this division kind of thing like that. But... with Brady and Manning, it was like, oh, no, they're going to play each other. We're going to put them on Sunday night. It's going to be good because people are going to watch it, and we're going to go from there. Like, now you probably would do that with, I don't know what, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, maybe, if you're going to do something like that. Maybe Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Russell Wilson, Cam Newton. Like, there's a couple quarterbacks you can do it with. Matt Ryan, maybe, because he had a really good year last year. But you always want to have a couple good quarterbacks basically be one of the marquee matchups. But now that Andrew Luck is hurt sometimes and there's not a rivalry directly with him and Brady outside of Deflategate and how that whole thing started, they don't schedule those games anymore.
Oh, man, my gosh. Can you imagine Deflategate with Peyton Manning as the quarterback for the Colts?
I mean...
Can you imagine the chaos in that?
It's not with Peyton Manning. You're talking about Peyton Manning being what Tom Brady was or Peyton Manning being the Colts at that time?
No, let's just say Deflategate happened when Peyton Manning... If he was the quarterback still playing in his prime and all that.
It's
a hypothetical question.
I think he probably would have diffused it a little bit because he respects the hell out of Tom Brady. Like, I think he would have been in the situation where it's just like, you know, they may not like each other, like buddy-buddy whatever, but he respects how good he is. He's probably been like, it's not that big of a deal, guys. Probably like kind of tried to talk it down a little bit because he enjoyed at least the rivalry of playing against Tom Brady all the time and didn't want that to kind of like be overshadowed by the fact of just like, oh, well, you know, this is cheating and da-da-da. He probably would have tried to defuse it a little bit.
Yeah, and it probably would have helped Tom Brady at that. But then again, I think that four-game suspension really fueled him. We saw what happened with that four-game suspension and how far that team came, even though they went 3-1 without him and they won the Super Bowl, pulling off the biggest comeback of all time. But enough about the Colts. It looks like we're gonna have to we have to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'll be back on Monday. I'll discuss any type of football news that happens over the next 72 hours. And as always, I'm Jeremiah.
And I'm Anthony.
I thank you guys for tuning in, and you guys have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Football Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.